Good afternoon and welcome. It's good to see everybody here. We appreciate your presence and encourage you to take out a Bible and follow along. We're actually not going to read a lot from the Bible this afternoon. We're going to refer to it a lot. Encourage you to study things afterwards and make sure that I did recount everything correctly. I've been known to make lots of mistakes, so I do encourage you to check and make sure I get it right. We're going to continue the series this afternoon on traits that matter. This is based on a study that was done for the younger people, looking at Old Testament individuals who are described as having a proper relationship with God, people that were pleasing to Him, especially if you consider Hebrews chapter 11, where it talks about how through faith, these men gained approval. God looked at them and was pleased with them. And we thought, well, if these people back then were able to please God, they're laying down a pattern for us that says if we'll do the same things, we can be pleasing to God too. It is an attainable goal, and they have laid the path out for us. And so we are actually getting towards the end of the series. We only have a few more people to do. What we've covered so far, and we've just given their trait as the last name, essentially. And with Abraham, it was faith. With Joseph, it was integrity. Moses was meek. Joshua was carefully obedient. Gideon was fearfully obedient. Samuel was faithful. David was a great worshiper. Elijah was a great reformer. And Josiah was tender-hearted. And what I want to turn our attention to now is the great individual in the Old Testament of Daniel. And Daniel is certainly approved by God. When you talk about Hebrews chapter 11, this passage that says, by faith these men of old gained approval. As he goes through, he says, I don't have enough time to tell you about everybody. And he starts talking about all these things that they've done. And one of them is, by faith the mouths of lions were shut. And everybody knows. If you know your Old Testament, you know exactly who the Hebrew author was talking about right there. He's talking about Daniel. Ezekiel 14 and verse 14 gets even more powerful in regards to Daniel being an approved individual. In Ezekiel 14 and verse 14, it refers to three individuals. And it's basically what it's saying is, if these guys couldn't do it, nobody can. That's basically the argument that's being made. And he's saying that these three men, though they were very righteous, they couldn't possibly today save anybody but themselves, is what he's saying. It's in Ezekiel 14, verse 14. He says, even though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in its midst, by their own righteousness, they could only deliver themselves, declares the Lord God. And Ezekiel actually lists those three men in the same argument a second time. That's impressive right there. You think about that, and what that's just saying is, if Daniel couldn't do it, neither can you. Right now, if Daniel was here, and ironically, when Ezekiel is writing, Daniel is alive at that time. He's a contemporary. And he's saying, Daniel can only save himself. He can't save you. If you consider the three men that are mentioned, that is one thing that they had in common, was that they had already saved others. So you have Noah. Noah saves his family. Never is it mentioned that his family was righteous. They're just his family. And he was righteous, and they were saved along with him. They were saved from the flood. It also mentions Job, and Job's a little bit less clear, but at the beginning of Job, we see him offering up sacrifices for his children. But more importantly, at the very end of the book of Job, God tells Job, you offer up sacrifices not for yourself, for your three friends who spoke wrongly about me. You offer up sacrifices for them, so I'll accept them back. And Daniel, well, we'll talk about Daniel, but Daniel's going to save the lives of many people. And the point here is that even though these men were incredibly righteous, so righteous that they had managed to save other people from doom, you guys are so messed up. They could only save themselves. They could never save you. But what a statement. You want to talk about somebody who has great power and great ability to help the people around them? Daniel. The Bible points to Daniel. Everybody knew him. And everybody knew him as being this type of a righteous individual. But it gets even more powerful, and if I were Daniel, the one I would appreciate the most is the next one, and that's in Daniel chapter 9 and verse 23. Daniel is praying, and at the end of his prayer, an angel appears. An angel from God appears and has a message for him. And included in that message is this. It says, at the very beginning of your supplication, the command was issued, and I have come to tell you, for you are highly esteemed. So give heed to the message and gain understanding of the vision. When an angel comes to you and says, you are highly esteemed, you've done something right. Daniel has done something right. The great question is, what? What is it that Daniel has done? And it's not fair because I've said that many of these people have multiple traits. Daniel especially, he's like the complete package. There is so much that Daniel gets right. But I'm going to make my argument for Daniel, and in order to do it, we're really just going to look at Daniel's life. And in order to do it properly, you need to understand Daniel's life in its context of his age. So we start off in Daniel chapter 1, and it doesn't tell us his age, but we get the idea that he is young. In Daniel chapter 1, I've already got a typo, that first line. Daniel chapter 1, in verse 3 and 4, says, then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal families and of the nobles, youths, and whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. Now this is towards the very end of the Old Testament. This is at the very end of the southern kingdom. It's about ready to be taken into captivity and to Babylon. And that happens in three waves. The first wave comes in and says, let's take the very best of your young people. And when they looked at Judah and the very best of their young people, Daniel gets taken. Now we don't get told Daniel's age, but we're told here that he was clearly a good student, so he couldn't have been too young. But when we just start doing our math, we come up with a basic number, and Daniel is going to be around 10 to 20 years old. And 20 years old, got to tell you, is pushing it. He is really young at this point. He's a teenager, basically. And he is taken away from his family, and he's brought to a foreign land. And in that process, he makes a decision. And this is really where he starts to stand out. In verse 8, it says, but Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. And so Daniel realizes that according to his religion, according to the old law, there were things that they wanted him to do that he couldn't do. And he's kind of has to make a choice. I'm going to a new land. New opportunity. I could really thrive here, or I could really cause trouble and be killed here. And he makes the decision that says, I'm going to serve God no matter what. No matter what they put in front of me, I won't eat something that's wrong. I won't eat something that's displeasing to God. So he makes this youthful decision when he's somewhere around 10 to 20. Let's just for time's sake say 15. He's about 15. Next year. So Nebuchadnezzar, that first wave is when Nebuchadnezzar has just taken rulership. That's the first year when he gets the first wave. What happens in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 1 then says, now in the second year of the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar. So now Daniel is, we're going to say, 16. You remember what you were like when you were 16? Some of you are waiting to get there, but most of us, we remember what we were like when we were 16. We were the epitome of wisdom and of maturity, correct? Yeah, we had all of our focuses in the right order, everything. Well, in Daniel chapter 2, the king has a dream. And he is really troubled by this dream. And so he goes to his wise men, the men that usually give him counsel and are able to divine such things. And he says, I really need to know the interpretation of this dream. And they say, okay, tell us the dream. He says, no, you tell me the dream. Because you could just make it up. You guys could just make up the interpretation of the dream. So I need to know you're really powerful. Tell me what I dreamed and then tell me what it meant. And they said, no, We can't do that. Nobody can do that. No king, no great king, nobody ever has asked to do what you're doing right there. And he says, you're trying to buy time. Here, let me make it a little bit more clear to you. Tell me the dream and its interpretation, or I will kill you. I will kill all of you. All of the wise men in the city, all of the ones who are supposed to have all these answers. And so Daniel, at about the age of 16, is pulled aside and ready to be killed. And he says, why? Why is it so urgent for you to kill me? And they explain the circumstances. He says, go tell the king. I'll tell him. And then he goes to his three friends and he says, go pray to God that he'll tell me the answer to this. And they pray, and then God reveals to him the dream and its vision. And we're getting the picture not just of who Daniel is, but the circumstance that Daniel is in. We start off with Daniel being taken away from his home, and the next thing is he's being threatened in this new place to be killed because of the ineptness of those around him. And so Daniel is brought before Nebuchadnezzar, and rather than praising himself, what Daniel does so well is he praises God. And he says, Nebuchadnezzar, you got it wrong. I don't know the dream. It's been told me. I don't have this power or this ability, but the God of all gods, he knows this. And he has revealed some incredible stuff to you. And he then goes back and he tells them about this vision about this statue with four different parts. And you might be familiar with it, but for our purposes, it's not terribly relevant. But what happens at the end of that is Nebuchadnezzar, the pagan, praises God and promotes Daniel. And so if you look at Daniel chapter 2, verse 46, at the end of all this, the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and did homage to Daniel and gave orders to present to him an offering and fragrant incense. Then the king answered Daniel and said, surely your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery. Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. How old was Daniel? About 16, and he just got put in charge of the country and all the wise old men. It's an amazing beginning for Daniel. And then we get to Daniel chapter 3. And Daniel's actually very conveniently organized. It's basically, here's each chapter is a story of something that happens in Daniel's life. And so the next one is this golden image. And oddly enough, Daniel's not in it. We don't know where Daniel went. But what it does is it helps us to give a picture of Daniel's time frame, of the sort of circumstance that he finds himself in. And so what happens is Nebuchadnezzar makes this huge golden statue, and he decides all of my people need to worship this statue. It doesn't matter what nation they've come from. It doesn't matter how they're serving me. Bring them all together. Have them fall before this statue and worship it. Now, I don't know where Daniel is. I suspect that he was not invited to this. But Daniel had set up, when he became the prefect, he set up three other guys. They were his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they're there. And they do something ridiculous. They don't fall down and worship the idol. Even when the command is very clearly given, you will worship this idol or you will die. And they say no. He says, let me give you a second chance here. I want you to understand. You will worship this idol or you will die. And they said, our God can deliver us. And even if he won't, we still will not fall down and worship this idol. Now, what ultimately happens is they don't worship the idol. Nebuchadnezzar tries to kill them and is unsuccessful because he throws them in this really, really hot fire, and God delivers them from the really, really, really hot fire, brings them out, and what does Nebuchadnezzar do? He praises God again. And then we get to Daniel chapter 4. But we're looking at this picture of Daniel and the threats that he's facing. In Daniel chapter 4, we have this unfavorable dream. This is really an amazing chapter because it's written by Nebuchadnezzar. Can you think of any other books in the New Testament, any other sections that are considered proper, inspired, that were written by a non-Israelite? This is it. This is a really special chapter. Nebuchadnezzar writes to us. And Nebuchadnezzar records the fact that he had another dream. And he didn't know what the dream meant. And so he gets Daniel, and Daniel then explains to him the dream. But the problem is Daniel hears the dream and he says, oh, I wish you hadn't had that dream. I wish it wasn't about you. It's a dream about this great tree, a magnificent tree, a wonderful tree. No tree could compare to it. All the things of the earth come to it. All the animals are underneath it. And then the tree falls apart and everything flees from it. And then it says something really weird. And the tree, which had the mind of a man, becomes, gets the mind of a beast. And Daniel then explains to him, says, this is really bad news. It says that you are really amazing. God has made you really, really powerful. And he's going to take it all away. But Daniel had the courage to tell him that. The courage to tell him, you are going to, well, basically, you're going to become an animal. He doesn't literally become an animal, but he goes out and he starts eating the grass and he gets kind of disfigured. And when that all happens, at the end of all of that, what happens? Daniel chapter 4 and verse 37. Nebuchadnezzar praises God. And so Daniel 4 and verse 37 says, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are true and his ways just, and he is able to humble those who walk in pride. And you actually could go through that chapter and find multiple occasions when he glorifies God. But here Daniel has been asked to bring an unfavorable message, and he does not resist. He does it. And we get to the next chapter, in chapter 5. And in chapter 5, Nebuchadnezzar is now gone. His son Belshazzar is king. And Belshazzar has a feast. And Belshazzar does something horrible. Belshazzar basically says, I am greater than every other god ever, including the one from Jerusalem. You remember how we took over that temple and we got all of their utensils? Let's go ahead and bring it in here and we'll just use those as our meal utensils. It was a snub in the face of God. It was something saying that it was a mockery of him. And Daniel will even say so. And while they're doing this, they're having this debauchery situation. And then Belshazzar looks up and there's this hand, this disembodied hand writing on the wall. And they can't understand what it's written. And so they go through the kingdom trying to figure out who can read it. And then Belshazzar's mom says, there's this guy named Daniel. Your father knows him. And he can do this. And so they go get Daniel, and Daniel says, God has decided your kingdom is gone. You've been counted, you've been measured, you've been weighed, you've been found wanting. It's all over. And that night, the Babylonian Empire falls. Now, time frame. It's important to understand that we've skipped some time in here. We started off with Daniel about 15. We're now at Daniel about, well, let's see, 75-ish? Daniel's a lot older when this occurs. He's about 75, maybe even a little bit older than that. And what happens that very night, it says in Daniel chapter 5 and verse 30, so the same night Belshazzar the Chaldean king was slain, so Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62. What just happened was we had the Babylonian Empire was this great empire, and one night it's gone and divided into two, and the next day it is now the new empire. We call it the Medo-Persian Empire. And now we have a new ruler. Darius comes in, and Darius comes and he sees Daniel and he says, I'm going to promote you, Daniel. I'm going to put you even higher up than you were before. And so Daniel chapter 6 verse 1, it says, it seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners. So you think about this, says, all right, I'm going to put 120 people in charge. Of the 120 people, I'm going to put three people in charge of the 120 people. So these three people are the highest of the high. And of the three people, one of them really starts to stand out, and it's Daniel. And so now Daniel is getting to the point of essentially like emperor of his region. He is the top of the top. Which leads to the next issue, and that is, all of his peers hate him. And all of his peers are going to do everything they can to stop him. And they can't find a single thing wrong with him. That makes Daniel a little different than me. If you spent a long time looking into me and trying to find some fault, I don't think you're going to have to try that hard. Daniel, with all of their effort, they can't find anything other than this one little thing. He really firmly believes his religion. he follows the old law. And so they change the law and make it so you can't pray to anyone else. And Daniel, well aware of that, prays towards Jerusalem, breaking the law. And Darius tries his very best to save Daniel. He figures out too late what had happened, but he's not allowed to change the law. The law was, if you pray to anyone else, you have to die. Daniel prayed to someone else, he has to die. Darius is in a very difficult spot, but he shows us how to handle ourselves in a difficult spot. I encourage you to go back and study it and think of it from that perspective. What do I do when I'm in an impossible situation? Darius follows the rules. He does what he has to do, but he fasts, he prays, he's begging God, please don't let Daniel die. Daniel's thrown in the lion's den, and of course, all of us, when we were kids, we all remember the Bible's class pictures where it shows Daniel as a little kid in the lion's den. Do you understand that's not right now? We're 60, 70 years after he was 15. Think more like Jack Smith being thrown into a lion's den. That's where we're closer to. So he's thrown into a lion's den. Darius comes back, and of course the lions didn't eat him. And what does Darius do? He praises God. In Daniel chapter 6, verse 25, then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land, may your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. And so he praises God, and it says in verse 28, so this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And Cyrus is the one who's going to say, everybody can go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. Now Daniel takes a sharp turn. If you're reading Daniel, you read the first six chapters and you get all of these accounts of Daniel, and it's pretty easy. And every time you have a question, say, well, that dream didn't make much sense. Daniel then explains to you what that dream was all about. You get to chapter 7 and everything changes. For one, it's not in chronological order anymore. So now we have to go back and forth, and it has all these visions. We're not going to look at it very much, but there is one thing. Here we are with Daniel. Now he's in his late 70s, possibly 80s. If he was 20 when he was taken from, he is now in his 90s. And when we get to Daniel chapter 9, what we find is Daniel in his late ages, very late 70s, early 90s, what we find him doing is he's still reading God's word. We find him reading the book of Jeremiah, discerning the fact that hey, God has said we were going to be in captivity 70 years. Let me do my math. That's now 70 years. He reads Jeremiah and he doesn't just see that it was going to be a 70-year persecution, but he also sees that the 70-year captivity was a result of their sin. And so when we see Daniel in his late years, in his 80s to 90s, we now see him praying and confessing the sins of the people. And that is Daniel. So now, what's the trait? There's so many that you could choose, right? A person who makes great decisions. You could talk about prayer because we see him being such a great prayer. And that is true. I challenged John Fraser with this. This was the one he came up with. Eat your vegetables so you can build endurance. And he's got it. It's not the vegetables part, but it is Daniel endurance. Daniel is so rare. We see somebody from a child all the way to these older years, and where do we see the flaws? Where do we see the weakness? Where do we see when he falls away? Do you understand how rare that is? David's so great until later. Solomon, so great until later. Even Moses, right? So great. Oh, well, then there was that one time. So many of the men of the Bible are so filled with flaws, but Daniel just doesn't seem to have them like that. Here's what makes Daniel the Daniel endurance. He maintained his faith in God from beginning to end, from youth until age. from the very young age of his life until very old end of his life. Here's what makes him Daniel endurance. He maintains his fight despite social pressures. When it was that the government says, you will worship some other god, Daniel didn't give in. When it was the fact that the people, his co-workers, all of his co-workers are trying to find some flaw with him, trying to get him to quit, trying to make him do something wrong, he still doesn't quit, he still doesn't do anything wrong. He shows us endurance, that there was no force on earth that got him to quit. And what's important to me also is, as much as Daniel faces tremendous struggles in his life, threats constantly, look at how much he succeeded. I find that people usually fall into one of two categories. They're religious when they're poor, or they're religious when they're rich. Very few people manage to be both. Some people are so poor, now they need God, but other people are so poor, they don't have time for God. But then some people get rich, and now they're so rich that they don't need God anymore, and so they stop thinking about God. Other people, while they're rich, they're thanking God because everything's great. Daniel finds himself in both conditions, going from poor to rich, going from poverty to power, and he never falters. Neither one is able to get him to fall away. You think about David. It's when David establishes himself as king that he starts running into trouble. You think about Solomon, it is when Solomon has tremendous wealth and peace that he starts running into trouble. You think about so many of the kings, it's when things are going well that they start running into trouble. And Daniel has so much go well for him, it says that things are going great for him at times. He is being glorified by the emperor. He's being lifted up above all other people. He's being given riches, and he doesn't have trouble. So you could call it Daniel endurance. You could use another term if you wish, and that is Daniel steadfast. He just keeps on the right course. And when the angel comes to him at the end of that, in Daniel chapter 9, the angel says, you are highly esteemed. And so we should follow that trait. It worked for him, and it'll work for us. Endurance is a trait that matters. In Hebrews chapter 10, verses 36 through 39, it talks about these people who had already endured some, but he says you need to endure more, for you have need of endurance so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. And then he goes on and he says, but if you shrink back, if you falter, even in your old age, if you falter, God will take no pleasure in you. In Revelation 2 and verse 10, Jesus says, be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. We see then that we should serve God in our youth and don't stop for as long as you live. Some of us were a little late on that youth part. But the point is, you serve God at this point, right now, right here, and you don't quit until the very, very end. Go throughout your whole life. We serve God through our challenges. And brothers and sisters, consider this point right now as you think about the world and the society, and very few people are talking about the great righteousness of America these days. We think about how wicked things are becoming, but we see with Daniel something amazing, and that is you don't need to live in a righteous society to be righteous. He is a beacon of light in a world of darkness. And you should serve God then, even if you are alone or close to it. Family gone, everybody's gone, and he still serves. And, brothers and sisters, in America, we are so incredibly rich, we need to remember this point too. Serve God in your successes, in your riches. Don't forget to serve God. That's the path that Daniel took. Now, one more thing I'd like to point out, and then we'll let this lesson be yours. I've already pointed it out. I've repeated it multiple times. I'd like to repeat it again. I'd like for you to consider something. When Daniel comes to Babylon, do you suppose that Daniel found Babylon righteous? Habakkuk complains about the wickedness of Babylon. I'm sorry, the wickedness of God's people. He complains about the wickedness of God's people, and he says, God, do something about it. And God comes to him and says, I will. I'll send the Babylonians. To which Habakkuk says, wait a second, they're worse than us. The Babylonians were not the place of righteousness. It was the place of tremendous wickedness and pride. And yet, one man and his three friends become the conduits through which God will bring the leaders of the known world to glorify Him. Now, I put that asterisk there because, one, it's not just Daniel. His three friends are a part of it. But it's not really about Daniel. It's about the fact that God uses Daniel. But in so doing, you have Nebuchadnezzar, a man who is known in the pages of history, even by people who don't care about biblical history, they'll still know about Nebuchadnezzar. He was a tremendous man. And he will on multiple occasions say, there is no God like the God. So the world's filled with darkness. And it seems like it's only getting worse. Take a stand and be God's tool. And you never know when the President of the United States might start glorifying God because of us. That's an encouraging message to me. It's encouraging to me that says, even when it seems like it's impossible, if we'll just be His tool, there is no impossible. Now, if you want to think about next month, think about Esther and which category, what trait you would give her. I thank you for your time and for your attention. I thank you for your endurance. Now go use that endurance. Apply it to your life. Let us be Christians today, tomorrow, the day after that. Let us be firmly growing towards God, pleasing God constantly, that we might also be highly esteemed in the halls of heaven. Thank you very much for your time and attention. If there are any here who are not Christians, we encourage you to become one this afternoon, to set aside the things of this world and to follow God. Repent of your sins, confess your faith, and be baptized into Jesus for the forgiveness of your sins. And if you're a Christian and you've fallen away, why don't you come back? Why don't you come as we stand and as we sing? Bless you.